This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
It's never the underdog.
Yes, sir.
It's never the underdog.
Yes, sir.
Final four now.
What's up, Duke fans? Welcome to the Devil's Den podcast. I'm your host, Josh Smith, joined by my co-host, Raul and Shu. Coming at you Tuesday night, so we're recording this after Duke beats Dartmouth to open the season, 92-54. Notable absence that last night was Mark Mitchell was kind of listed day-to-day. It sounded like he had like a little bit of a sprained ankle. Doesn't seem to be too concerning. We might kind of get into that a little bit later on. But for now, we did get Raul on press row, his first experience. So I kind of just wanted to get his feedback or just his thoughts on that. Kind of last minute, Raul. So you didn't have a whole lot of time to prepare. You just kind of took the ticket, got in line. And what was that process like for you now having a CTC experience and then a live game here?
Yeah, it was really cool. Like you said, we already did it before, of course, Shu and I, and just having been through that whole process, knowing exactly where the will call was, exactly where the Bill Brill media room is, all that stuff, how to get to the locker room. That was big, of course. And then just running into a few familiar people, some people that we'd seen the last time. And then I saw Brian Geisinger there too. So I chatted with him a little bit. Josh Cox was there. So shout out to him. He's really cool. But yeah, so, you know, that kind of eased a little bit of my concerns. I did have a moment of panic when, I couldn't find where I was listed on the seating chart for a while. Finally found it, got out there, was going to take my seat, and then it wasn't listed where it was supposed to be. And then I found out, I guess it would be Mark Watson. Is that his name?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, from BDN. Is that right?
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, I found out he wasn't coming, so they'd mislabeled his seat. It was supposed to be my seat. So eventually I figured that out thanks to the help of some other people there. So.
Nice.
Little moment of panic there, but you know, I was just afraid, like I was just going to be stuck, like hovering with the students there because I couldn't find my seat, and you can't walk by the cameras once things start up. But yeah,
great. That'd experience. Hilarious to see you on TV,
yeah,
kind of like,
yeah,
oh,
exactly.
You had a good spot where at least you could get in and out. Like,
oh yeah, I did really like that. Yeah. It wasn't as cool as being maybe in the middle of the court, but at the same time, the convenience of just being able to slide in and out there, and I had extra leg room and stuff like that too. I will say that those crazies that you probably saw right behind me were like all over me all night. So that was an interesting experience. but yeah, they were really funny, and it was great to experience a more kind of engaged crowd. I mean, I thought they were good at CTC as well, but this was like at a completely different level. I know Shu said that the exhibition was, you know, maybe kind of like so-so, but this game, it was like packed house, super loud, like definitely loud, honestly. Like, I wish I had brought earplugs.
Wow. Yeah, that's good. And set the tone,
yeah,
really.
Exactly.
I'll ask you the same thing I did ask Shu, though. CTC, obviously, we're playing each other. It's easy to probably keep emotions in check. Was there any, like, maybe for good or on the inverse side of this, did you find that it was just, like, emotionally detached watching it from press row? Or was it harder to, like, oh, I was about to clap for that flip dunk, and now I have to contain myself with the crazies going bonkers behind you?
I don't find not cheering for something good. I don't find that as difficult as containing my frustration.
Yeah,
yeah. Exactly.
F-bomb.
Yeah. So the two that were hardest for me, Christian Reeves, who we'll talk about later, had two like rebounds that he kind of botched, and they somehow both ended up in tip-ins and almost kind of looked like he tipped it in. And one flew like 4 feet in the air and somehow went in the basket. And I had this involuntary hand gesture, which obviously you're not going to be able to see if you're listening to it, but just my hand went up like that. And that was it. Like, but it was completely involuntary. So I'm going to have to, you know, sit on my hands next time or something. But yeah. But overall, I was, you know, sweating it out a little bit for the first 13 minutes or so of the game, which we can get into. And I, you know, I was kind of contained my frustration there. But as we pulled away, it got more and more enjoyable.
Mm, yeah. Well, that's probably a good point to jump into. Pretty slow start here, right? Like watching the first, really the first half, but primarily those first, what would you say? You said 13 minutes or so. That's probably about accurate.
It was, because I just rewatched.
Like 18 to 14 or something,
yeah,
wasn't
exactly.
It? It was like really close.
7:30 left in the half.
Yeah. Yeah. So from that point, you're probably not expecting to get to 92. It definitely, I wasn't, right? I was like, are we getting to 70 at this point? And obviously there was a lot of foul trouble going on and a lot of stuff there. Where your seat was, like, did you find the officiating to be like, yeah, okay, they're just calling it almost NBA style, no hand checks, no nothing? Or was it seemed a bit nitpicky, like you weren't really allowed to play? What was that kind of perception being there? Because I know on the floor, or even live in general, you just get a different perspective on it. What was the kind of feeling in the building about the officiating?
Oh, people were livid, I would say. They were not happy. And I kind of ended up feeling the same way. I don't necessarily think it was like the refs calling everything on us and not Dartmouth. I think it was that we're playing a more aggressive perimeter style of defense.
Sure.
And because of the way they were calling it, which was very nitpicky, it favored Dartmouth. And that's why we ended up with more fouls than them. You know, and it's one of those things we always see kind of just odd officiating early in the season because they always have new points of emphasis. And I'm guessing the points of emphasis this year are about perimeter hand checking because that's mostly what they ended up calling. Though, you know, we can talk about McCain later as well because there were a few things where it's like he seemed like he did his best to avoid a foul. And it's like, what are you even supposed to do in that situation? Particularly the one that annoyed me was when he was like backing up with his hands raised the entire time and the player's just driving into him. It's like, that's just defense. What are you supposed to do if you can't do that?
Yeah. 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 I thought that at least three of those could have been no calls. Right. And so when you get all three of them being foul calls, that's kind of tough.
Which Ro, you wouldn't have heard it on the broadcast. They talked about a new rule is the straight line drive. So anytime you have a straight line at the basket, a defender is not allowed to like, last second step into your way, that's going to be a block every time.
Right. So I guess it's what they were applying to McCain there, but I thought
one of
what
he got with that. But yeah, the one on the baseline, his fourth one was kind of, I think that's the one you're talking about was, I mean, the dude just spun back and kind of bumped into him and they called a foul on him. I think it surprised both of them. Like, whoops.
I was actually talking about the third one, which was probably the straight line drive.
Okay.
But I thought he was there for a while. Like he was tracking him the whole way and backing up. That's what I saw from my angle. But of course, that was on the opposite end of the court at that time. So it's hard to tell. You know, maybe he did slide in front of him. I don't know.
Yeah, I think that particular play, he actually was chasing down. He was going to chase down the ball from behind, but realized he wasn't going to get to it. So he tracked back to his man. And by that time, the guy was making his move and he kind of slid in there a little late. So I that was the one that I Agreed kind of was like, all right, that's a blog. But the other ones were pretty lame.
Right. Yeah, it's you know, it's weird how what you can see live versus on TV is just so different. There's some things that you can see much better live, and then some that you're not going to be able to, because for the entire first half, I'm seeing 90 feet down the court. And then the second half, it's right in my face.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So some of those McCain fouls occurred like really far away from me. So it's tough to tell.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, let's kind of bounce around a few things here. I guess we'll start with kind of the positives. Bench scoring, right? Like a lot of guys were involved, which is kind of not ironic, really. I think it's, we had 35 points off the bench, but it was kind of a little skewed probably, right? Like Foster was had a tremendous game, spoiler alert. Jalen Blake's played a really good game. But we didn't really use the bench that much early in the game. So I guess we'll start there, kind of what you've made of that. To me, it seems like there's just a lot of backcourt depth that we're just going to have some of these guys, regardless of which one of these guards are coming off the bench.
Well, we haven't even mentioned Mark Mitchell being out, have we? Or maybe you did at the top.
I did at the very top.
The fact that we were able to get that much bench scoring without him is, you know, a huge deal.
Yeah. And I thought, and it's kind of a double thing because it's incredible that we got that much bench scoring with him out. But then I was also like watching the game live in the first half of like, wow, we're not really even getting into some of these guys with him out. What does that say when he's back? Because when he's back, he's the only guy on the roster that really can play the way that he plays, right? From a body style, from defensively, the switchability. You got to think he's going to eat up as many minutes as he can handle, you know, 30 minutes a night, 35 if he can. But it was good to see some guys getting involved. At least, I mean, I thought, you know, obviously I mentioned Foster, I thought he was phenomenal. You know, maybe man of the hour was Jalen Blake. So talk to me when Jalen comes in, and I think it is 18-14, or it's right around that point. He comes in, gets the pick six, hits the three at the corner to end the half pretty much. What was the energy level like with Jalen Blake? He seemed to kind of just spark a run for us.
When he got that steal into the and one was probably the loudest it got all night. So yeah, just 9-0 run from him, essentially, almost single-handedly. I think one, it was the flip and one, but still it was like all kind of sparked by Blake's. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you can kind of tell he's a little bit of a fan favorite just because of how hard he plays.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, as soon as he came in, I think he had three or four deflections within like a minute. I think he came in, stole the ball, they got it back, he blocks the shot, comes down. That's when he gave up that pass that the old redheaded kid tried to yam one on him. I mean, he gave him a hard foul, clean play, whatever, but and then got another deflection like literally like seconds later. Like, dude, just he had his hands on the ball. Pretty much
missed a shot. Time. I mean, he only took three shots, but he also made all three of his free throws. I mean, comes in, has two assists, one turnover, two blocks, three steals. I mean, he was guarding their four or five at one point, right? Like,
you guys probably noticed from the last year or so, whenever he takes it into the basket, like he goes in like reckless abandon, like, and takes some hard tumbles, but makes a lot of those shots. Like, a lot of those still go in.
Yeah. Yeah.
It looked like he was thinking about trying to dunk it on that and one there. Like, I thought he was flying in for like a massive dunk, but it's probably better that he just went for the layup because he wouldn't have gotten it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's talk about just shooting and offensive efficiency in general. I didn't really recognize it as I was watching the game. You go back and look at the stats. We shot 74% from two in this game. That is outrageous. I mean, basically, if you look at the whole game, we're at 1.35 points per possession. That's really, really good, you know. From three, we only shot 17. I know coach said that that's probably going to be on the low end of the attempts, but I mean, you shoot 41% from three. Everybody that played 20 minutes or more had a offensive rating above 130. That's phenomenal. I mean you got like Flip up there at 165, you got Jalen at 179, which is absurd, but for all of those guys to be above 130 that play 20 minutes, that's pretty big time. What did y'all see from that in terms of just moving the ball, being able to put points on the board, especially we just mentioned the first 13 minutes, we couldn't score at all, basically. And then something happens, and then boom, to coin the phrase, the flip switches and we take off. Right. So talk to me a little bit, just as y'all were watching it in real time, shoot from you from on TV with me and then Raul being there. What'd you take away from the offensive side of things?
Well, I thought once we got into a more of a, especially there later, Flip was controlling the paint, for a handful. And it was just like, dribble handoff to a dunk, or Ryan Young's grabbing crazy offensive rebounds, throwing scoop passes to him. So he got a lot of just easy baskets there. They did switch up the defenses several times, kind of baited us into a couple tough mid-range shots here and there, but not a terrible amount, I guess, because obviously we shot the ball well.
Yeah, it seemed like we figured out their defense as the game went on. Early, they were doubling Flip from the strong side, like every time, and he wasn't really able to get anything. Shire actually complimented him on his patience and his decision making. He didn't try to force anything when he was doubled. And we ended up with good shots out of it, but it was slowing down our offense. I'm talking about the first 13 minutes or so there.
Yeah.
And then later, we were able to kind of solve that riddle. But it's just, that's something that's going to happen when you have Young in the game as well, because Young's not a floor spacer. So that allows the second defender to come over, and they don't have to worry about his spacing of the floor. And Mark Mitchell's not a, supremely good floor spacer either, but at least he's kind of a threat to drive, and he will hit the occasional three. So I think you'll see our three-point volume go back up once he's out, just because there's going to be more spacing overall.
Yeah. I mean, Flip only missed two shots, right? And I think maybe even more impressive to me was the usage that he had to have, one turnover, I think, is all he had. So that's, that was a part of his game as a freshman that was left a little bit to be desired, right? That was the next step of how to remain under control, how to get into your actions quicker. Dude looks healthy. Dude looks great.
His passing has really improved. That's what I've seen so far through, these three admittedly sort of meaningless competitions, blowout exhibition win, blowout regular season win, and then a scrimmage. But I just like what he still has the occasional loose handle that'll result in a turnover, but it's not like it was, especially at the beginning of last year.
Yeah. For as a team, we had a 2-1 assist to turnover ratio, we had 18 assists. Proctor has 8 of those, which is getting up there. We talked about our over unders of how hard it is to reach that. And then now I hear Shire talking about how he thinks he could lead the nation in assists. So maybe we're just going to let him do that. What did y'all make of the passing? I mean, it looked like schematically that the ball was moving pretty well. It didn't stick very much. We're making a killing. Like y'all mentioned, the mid-range, if any team's trying to play drop against a Jared McCain, a Jeremy Roach, even Tyrese had the nice little hesitation into the mid-range. I mean, really Foster's made him got pay the floater on that too. Foster's got the floater. What did y'all see in terms of the ball movement, in terms of any offensive sets that y'all recognize? The out-of-bounds plays, again, were a huge success last night. Just talk a little bit, I guess, from a ball movement perspective.
Yeah, I thought that the Proctor flip pick and roll was lethal. And I thought that the Roach flip pick and roll also looked really good. And then just the ability of Foster and Roach to both attack off the dribble opened up a lot of things as well, because they're generally looking to score, but it's still going to collapse a bunch of people. And they were able to make some good passes out of it too. I think Foster ended up with 0 assists somehow, but it was probably one of those things where he made the pass that led to the pass. And he's more of a kind of score first guy anyway. But yeah, that I think that Proctor flip pick and roll is going to be our bread and butter.
Yeah.
Somehow, I don't know if you guys remember the play, that just a missed defensive assignment. All of a sudden, Flip's just standing in the paint wide ass open. Proctor hit him with a really quick.
Oh, that was my favorite.
Nice
one-handed pass.
Nice snap dime, too, because it looks wide open, but then you see some of the replays of some of the angles, and he just threads it right through there too, man. So it was nice. I'd like to get Geisinger back on at some point, because we ran, I think my favorite play of the game is we have Flip kind of up top. Proctor sets a screen kind of like right around like, you know, the paint area for Ryan as he curls over, and then Proctor goes up to the top of the key. Ryan catches it and Flip just dives and he just hits him for that dunk. Some of that stuff that we're running looked really good. Really. And Foster, you don't really have to run anything for him.
Yeah.
That dude is, I did not realize how quick he was with the ball.
It's crazy.
Maybe Dartmouth just didn't quite have the foot speed, but he was getting it and pretty under control, really, like going to the rim, going to the basket. They weren't offering a ton of resistance too, right? They weren't really trying to do a whole lot down there. But got to be big for him to see the ball go in like that and to be able to see that, yo, I can get to the rack when I want to. I guess we can talk about Foster.
There was more contact than you would think, than it probably looked like on TV.
And always
TV.
Like that there, yeah.
Yeah. On Foster's drives and on Roach's drives, I was just really impressed with the Foster's strength. He just kind of bumps. We already talked about this, but he kind of just bumps people out of the way, you know, and he's going to have to be careful. He's going to pick up some charges in a few games. But Roach's like touch around the rim just has improved yeah. so much.
Yeah.
He has so many like kind of like really soft, crafty finishes, and he goes harder on his drives now too, is what I've noticed. Like there's not as much hesitation. I feel like he used to get into the lane and then kind of like stop. And yeah. In the second half, especially, he was just kind of pummeling towards the rim.
Yeah. You
and
can tell he gets over, in there like a running back. Mm-hmm. He's got the ball, you know, right. protected. And then, right as he's going up, he just kind of finesses it off the backboard.
Yeah. And the patience that he showed, too, because we talked about that Roach flip, or just flip as the screener in any pick and roll. But that initially, that one time he hits flip, I think either flip gets the dunk or he gets the layup. But then the next time he comes down, they run the same action. But Jeremy has like the wherewithal to kind of like wait just a second, act like he's going to kind of do it, and then just breaks, like just running back right to the rim. And you're right, dude. Some of those finishes, some of the English that he was putting up off of some of those was pretty impressive from a 6 foot, 6'1" guard. You know, I think he's listed at 6'2". We'll give him that. but, you know, I mean, it's below the rim stuff, but the IQ in the ball screen is what I was looking at, right? Of when to kind of go, when not to. And you're right. That second half, there was a stretch where the first half, Jaylen Blake's kind of took over for us for a stretch. The second half, you're up 30, so maybe you don't recognize it. You're up 20, you don't recognize it as much. But Jeremy Roach is just unstoppable there for a little bit. He's got the nice mid-range. He's always had that. But the at-the-rim finishing is something we've probably been talking about for 2 years about that's the next step, right? Obviously, the three-point shot didn't take him many of those. I think he took two. But I thought Jeremy looked really good. And he probably won't get talked about a lot from this type of game, but I thought he was just like really good, exactly in the role that he wanted to be in. Started to take over late in the first half too, like when it got into crunch time. It just looked like these guys knew where they needed to be. You know, like we're one game in, there's a lot of stuff when we talk about defensively, but for the most part, people seem to understand where they needed to be, what their role was in the offense. Which is pretty impressive when you lose a guy like Mark Mitchell on Saturday and all of a sudden you throw Ryan Young in there and there's probably not a whole lot of time to change the game plan. So I guess for me, continuity seemed pretty good for day one. So you'll take that. Anything else positivity wise we need to talk about before we get into some of the areas to look for, areas to monitor?
I'll bring back up the out of bounds plays. The one that I really liked was the one that resulted in a flip dunk. Proctor's inbounding under the basket, and Roach comes up and sets a screen. It's just really simple, and then Flip just ducks to the rim. You know, maybe not the best defense, but
sure,
you know, just really effective. And then obviously we ran the same. Tyrese.
1 or 3.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And it's nice that we can just pull that out. That wasn't even out of a timeout. That was just something that we just kind of improvised there. And obviously it's just a go-to thing that they always have in their back pocket. And then he did miss the shot, but still, you know, great play.
Got a good look. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. A lot of those little short curl stuff that we were running on those out of bounds, a lot of different options and actions. Flip was the beneficiary of quite a few of them. So that was kind of nice.
Did the Stewart lob come off of a out of bounds play or not? I can't really remember.
I think so because you know he had went up for that fast break one, and you could tell John he knew he wanted to get that one, so I think he ran that specifically for him. You know,
well, he'd been trying to pick 6-1 like for 3 minutes there since he had been in
right because they gave the take foul on one of them, which kind of pissed me off.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, another thing positive, well, not really positive for Duke, but and it's easier on almost 40-point win to appreciate it. But that Neskovic, however they pronounced it, was just he was killing us. Dude. Yeah. I mean,
and he was guarded by Proctor quite a bit too.
A lot of times he was hands in his face, dude. But his mid-range, like, I mean, he was just like in his bag, man.
I mean, that is an area of concern. And maybe it's just having Mitchell out, but Proctor against wings that are bigger than him is going to be more of a thing this year. His size was so great for us last year because he was mostly guarding on the ball, or if he was guarding, like, you know, not the point guard, he was guarding like a two or somebody like that. So he's just going to be guarding a lot of small forwards this year. Yep. And it's going to, some of them are going to be able to shoot over the top of him like Neskovic could. So having Mitchell there to kind of switch on to somebody like that, if it's not working, could be huge.
Yeah, because we went through the lineup. Flip was the five with four guards. Blake's playing the floor four. And that dude immediately backed him down. And
right, exactly.
He tried to take a charge, and they're not going to give you that anymore. So he just turned right over his shoulder and scored on him.
Yeah, well, and Proctor having a much increased I don't really know if it's load, but just responsibility, I think, offensively to really run the team. I think last year it kind of started where Jeremy was kind of doing a lot of initiation. It's inevitable, probably at some point, that the defense that we saw, he might not quite be the ball hog stopper, because I think last year he struggled so much early offensively that he kind of just was like, I'm going to lock in and control what I can control and just be this ball hog defender. Now I'm kind of okay with him, like, you know, don't kill yourself out there, bro, defensively, because we really need you to orchestrate. We really need you to be, I mean, you look at, we talked about Jalen Blaze, but it's no coincidence that Proctor gets two early fouls and we look like dog crap. And then he comes back in and we immediately hit our next four or five shots or whatever, five of six, whatever it was. He's just so in control. And so his ability to play quickly, to play in the half court, his IQ in those screens, I mean, you can't replicate that. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, if he's only going to take three or four shots, I set the assist over under way too low. If that's the kind of game he's going to play, and maybe he will look to score more in tighter games, but yeah, I mean, clearly he was just not interested in scoring last night. He could have, you know, he took the open shots he had, but how many shot attempts did he even have?
I think he had six total shots, six, maybe. Okay, yeah. I think he was three of six. Yeah, three of six. So, yeah, eight assists. Would like to see him a little more. I mean, the shot looks good, and I want him shooting those threes, but I'd like to see him try to get to the free throw line a little bit more, just because, like we've talked about, we know how lethal he is there at the line. Did shoot pretty well as a team, 9 for 12, so, you know, nothing.
Ironically, Tyrese missed his only free throw of the night.
I know. That's funny.
I think we only had, like, four or five guys even shoot free throws. Flip shot four.
Five. Yeah, we had five guys shoot him. Yeah, Tyrese missed his only one. Roach missed his only one. Caleb went 2 of 3. Blake's went 3 of 3. So probably not what you would have thought would have happened with that, but, you know, hey, we'll take it.
It's crazy to have only shot, to have shot less free throws than our opponent in camp. Like, I don't, it's just not something I'm used to seeing, you know?
I said, I thought it was a really bad whistle, but then it was also that kind of early season points of emphasis thing that'll fade away. And then it was also the way we were defending versus the way they were defending. So it's a combination of all of those things.
Let's talk a little bit, as we kind of have already shifted a little bit into some areas we want to monitor. And I don't think this one's going away. I think it's something that we're going to talk about all season. I do think, and we talked about this offline, of, there's going to be give and take, right? You can't construct this perfect basketball team that's just going to be awesome in every facet. Like, there's going to be benefits and gains that we get from flip at the five and some smaller lineups. And there's going to be some areas that you have to sacrifice. It's really looking at, you know, what's going to work for the team. But I think rebounding in this first one is a marginal concern, right? Going forward, we saw it a little bit in the exhibition. We see it again tonight. Not really so much as the total rebounds that I care too much about, but to get doubled up on the offensive glass is not ideal when you're playing Young and Flip together, right? Because those are two guys that should be really, that are really, really good offensive rebounders. Do you think that was just a function of who we were playing, the shots that they were taking, some of the pace? or are y'all concerned a little bit about rebounding at this stage? Shu, I'll go to you first for this one.
I mean, I won't say it's concerned, like I said, an area to monitor. The first game against Pembroke, I think they got 10 offensive rebounds, and we only out-rebounded them total by like 6, 7, 8 rebounds. You know, they did say that those guys were, again, like second best in D2 last year rebounding. So, you know, take that, whatever. But this game, I thought a couple of their offensive rebounds were just us, like, I think there was one time Reeves and Flip were both going for a rebound, fighting for the ball, and they slap it around, and it gets kind of out to the 3-point line, and they pick it back up. So there was a couple times that, you know, we could have just cleaned that up. That would have taken away a handful of their offensive rebounds.
Yeah, I thought that, and I noticed this in the exhibition too, that for whatever reason, it doesn't feel like Young is quite vacuuming them up like he did last year, where it was just like every ball in his vicinity he was grabbing. There's been a lot of bobbled balls. So maybe that's just random thing across a couple games. And then, you know, Reeves' hands did not look that great last night either. So if we could just, when we're there in position to grab the ball, just actually grab it, that would help a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. And the guards are going to have to come down and help out a little bit on that.
Yeah. Right? So like you said, it's just going to be give and take, because if you are going to play three guards, you are smaller at the three. So there's, you know, you're going to get fewer rebounds.
Yeah. Yeah. I thought Foster did a pretty good job on the glass and get three or four. So, that, you know, Proctor is a guy who historically last year was a pretty good rebounder for his side.
Yeah. He skied for a few of them last night that I noticed.
So, you know, maybe we'll see more of that. I know Kay was really big on that when we would go small, of having the guards come in and help down. I think another thing, we don't have this on our outline, but I think another thing to talk about in terms of just not really a concern, but just something to monitor, was just the rotation in general. We've kind of hinted at it a little bit here. Obviously, we don't have Mark tonight. We're penciling him in as a 30-plus minute per game starter when he's available. I don't think there's going to be much change in terms of Foster being the first guy off the bench, unless he enters the starting lineup, and then it's probably be McCain or whoever goes out will probably stay. But talk to me a little bit about where you see, based on this one game, and we've only got a sample of one of what John's done, what does this rotation look like to y'all? I mean, I'm guessing now we have Foster, Young, and is Blake's going to be the eighth guy? I mean, Christian Reese was the first big off the bench tonight. I think that surprised a few people, unless you only watch CTC. What do y'all make of that? Like, how deep do you think we go? We can talk about Shoot if you want to at some point, but Where do y'all see this rotation going based on, obviously, last night? We're logging to you first for this one.
Yeah, I mean, I think the sixth and seventh guys are pretty set. It just comes down to if that eighth guy is going to be Blake's or if it's going to be Sean Stewart. And I don't want to spoil kind of what I'm going to talk about with Stewart later, but there's a path to him cracking into the rotation simply because of some of Ryan's limitations and some of Reeves' limitations. You know, especially if Mark Mitchell was to miss another game, let's hope he doesn't, but somebody like Stewart would offer more defensive versatility than a Young would. But yeah, again, I don't want to get too much into the later talking points, but I think Blake's will have a place, because if you are going to play smaller with three guards, then he offers a level of defensive pressure that can kind of offset some of that size concern because of his wingspan.
Yeah. That's fair. Shu, what are you thinking?
I think I'm just curious how the Blake's minutes go, because last year we saw, you know, for a while, I don't know if he started a game or two, but he had those, you know, the back-to-back 17-point games, was playing, and then all of a sudden those minutes just kind of cratered out. So
I think he broke his nose too, that can't help, right? Sure. I mean, there was some stuff, but yeah, I mean,
and just him not being a threat to shoot off ball and stuff just really kind of clogs the floor, especially last year because we were playing two bigs at all times, right? So maybe this year with the floor open up a little bit more, you can kind of mitigate that a little bit, you know, because if Blake's is going to be playing the three, or even like last night playing the four, then his shooting becomes a little less important than if he's at the one or the two.
Sure. Right. And depending on, like you said, who we play, right? If we're able to really press and get out and run and play in the open court, Blake's can thrive in that and getting up and down and guarding at that pace. In a half court set, things can get a little more questionable. So, you know, I think that's something we'll continue to track. What about TJ Power? That's someone that Jeff Goodman has raved about. Brandon Marks talked about his thing. We were all, I think, a little bit more on the conservative side of what that might look like year one. A lot of people had this guy in the starting lineup. To me, the game just has not slowed down for him. And I'm not really sure that's not a knock on the staff or him, but I'm not really sure like what the role or what the fit is, right? Are you going to play more of a three? Are you going to play more of a hybrid four? Where can you defend? Like the systematic knowledge, it's just hard to see that. Obviously, it was just one game last night, but where do y'all see that trending here? I guess if we have to not give an over-under for TJ, but do you see him cracking into this rotation at all? Or what do we have to do to keep this guy involved, I guess, is the better question. Shu, I'll toss that one to you.
Yeah, that's going to be tough. I mean, I think in the you know, the big marquee games, we probably won't see him at all through the non-conference. And even through some of the easier, I mean, hopefully he gets to play against Louisville or Notre Dame, right? Like,
sure,
they're not looking all that great. So hopefully we can get him some minutes there. But I think we might see more at the three, more of his minutes at the three. I just don't know if he's strong enough to guard a four right now. Although, you know, depending on who he's guarding as a three, that might not be a good matchup either. Defense is obviously where it's, you know, that's his limitation right now.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I also think, obviously defense is the big concern, but I also think that offensively, just from what I saw, he was only in for a few minutes, but I thought he needed to move more. He was just kind of standing on the right wing there. And it's just like, it was just a little too easy for guys to close out on him. So yeah, it just doesn't seem like he's really kind of figured out exactly where to be on either end. And if he didn't play last night with Mitchell out, it's like, you know, that's your prime opportunity. Is he really going to play once Mitchell's back sucking up 32 minutes or whatever?
Yeah, that was my only thing last night, as I was like, man, this is a great time with Mark out to see what you got with this guy. Right. Well, John kind of has a better idea in practice, but to see in competition, sometimes things just click in competition. He seems to be a pretty intense competitor for what we know. So it's, you know, see what we got there, but, and it happens, right? Like sometimes it takes a little bit for freshmen to get acclimated, especially in a year where we don't really need the freshmen to be much more than freshmen, right? We just kind of need them to be fresh, to come in and to provide a spark. Obviously McCain and Foster are a bit different from where they're at coming in. But it's always, I think, a little easier for guards to acclimate at this level than it is for wings or hybrids, forwards or bigs or the like. And if you're behind defensively, that's a bit of a tough curve too, right? Of just learning how to defend in college. It's just a bit of a different animal. So,
but we've also talked about like, he's kind of that in that tweener range.
He's in
right?
tweener. It's hard to find. Like you said, does he guard,
so that's
guard
a three? Double, does he guard four? Double hard. Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. You know, I think for me, and obviously this is getting way ahead, it's just making, I want to keep him involved, at least from the vision standpoint that John talks about. If this, you know, there's a path to where maybe we need this guy, maybe something clicks at some point. Who knows? Injuries happen, you know, all the time.
Was he a top 20 recruit too?
I think he was. I think he finished right around that spot.
So yeah, it's not really the same situation as a guy like Jaden. Jaden came in what, in the 60s or something like that. So it's like it's a little tougher to sell a guy ranked in the top 20 on just barely playing.
Yeah. Yeah, that's I think he was 16th nationally. So yeah, that's a tough sell. Right. That's a tough sell, but you know, we'll see. We'll see what happens. You know, there's obviously we're one game in, so there's plenty of opportunities coming up to, maybe not Arizona might not be the best one, but Friday. Hey, Michigan State looks not good. So we'll see what they got going on. Maybe they can get past Southern Indiana before we face them next week.
But, I mean, we just saw last year, it's not uncommon for players to struggle early and then something for to suddenly click for them, you know, the flip switches.
Yep. Yeah. There we go. Yeah. So we'll monitor those things as we get through. You know, overall, pretty good game, pretty good experience. But let's take a quick little break. We'll come back. We'll do our player spotlights right quick, and then we'll kind of preview this Arizona game.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
All right. Well, let's get back into it. We've talked about all these guys already, but you know, if you're new to this, typically the last 2 years or so, we've really kind of like to pick a player that we spotlight each week. It's not always the MVP. It's not always the best. Spoiler, neither of us picked Flip because he kind of just spoke for himself. But I'll start. And you know, this has been my guy since we first started recruiting him, since he committed. Got the shirt hanging up in the closet. To me, it's just Tyrese in terms of what he does, how he orchestrates the offense. I mentioned that, you know, he goes out with the fouls. We can't score. He comes back in immediately. Even if he's not involved, I think just his presence on the floor opens up so much stuff. Offensively, the trigger looks there. He looks confident. We talked about some of those passes to have 8 assists. We don't get many guys like that. Typically, that's just not how we've played. I think what Tyus averaged 6.5, 6.5, yeah, maybe max, something like that. So it just, it's not something that happens all the time. So to have a guy like that orchestrating in what I consider the most important position on the floor, good to see him just kind of ready to go and locked in. So I'll go Proctor. Shoe, I'll toss it to you. You can highlight someone for us.
Yeah, I'm going to go with my guy again from Harrisburg, North Carolina, Caleb Foster. I just thought it, you know, we talked about it earlier, like the strength on his drives. He's going in kind of and looking to initiate contact as he's going up, but he also puts it up like really softly as he's doing it. And just, I think Childress might have mentioned he had maybe one of those drives where he kind of threw up a wild shot. I think he ran into Reeves kind of going into the lane. And just look at that point, would I rather you turn it over or throw one up off the rim and have a chance for us to get a rebound? Probably, you know, the latter. So, but most minutes played on the night, that was in the exhibition. I think he was the second most as well. So he's getting a lot of, you know, a lot of opportunity to showcase what he can do. But just overall, good game from him.
Yeah, I thought he looked great defensively too. We didn't talk about that, but I think he had two or three deflections. I know he had the one deflection for sure that Roach got led to the fast break. So yeah,
but he also handled the backdoor cuts really well. He got a couple steals off of those too. You know, that's been a little bit of an issue for us earlier in the night. So I really liked that. Maybe I'll put it in here if the sound quality is good enough. But I did have a quote from him that was just basically about his driving ability, and I just asked him and he just kind of credited his trainer. Nothing too groundbreaking, but that was really what stood out to me was just, he's just a beast going to the rim.
Yeah. The speed. Yeah. The speed.
The open court speed too. He has a way of pushing the ball down the floor as fast as he can go, but it doesn't look out of control. It's kind of like Kyrie like.
The new straight line drive rule will really benefit him too.
Yeah.
Because now you're not going to have, he's looking for that path. And if he sees it and he gets going to it, you know.
I want him to punch one of these at some point because the speed that he's coming down there with, dude. I mean, he's 6'5". You know, he's got the hops to do it. So I'd like to see him get up and get one. But all right, Raul, round us out here with the spotlight.
Okay, so I'm going to pick a player that might seem, I hinted at it earlier, it might seem a little odd because he only had 6 points. But Sean Stewart, I was really impressed. He came in with like 11 minutes left in the game and then basically played the whole rest of the game. Maybe not that final minute because I see that he had 10 minutes on the box score. But so he basically played 10 straight minutes. And I thought that the defense actually looked really good with him out there, which was surprising because we went really small. He was the 5 and he basically had like 4 guards around him. I mean, TJ might have been out there for a bit too. But his athleticism and switchability was causing like a lot of disruptions. You know, he got that one steal, which should have been a dunk. And I could tell he was going to wind up for something pretty cool, but then he just kind of slipped. And good on him to not travel, honestly. Most players in that situation would just completely lose the ball or travel. So he just kind of caught himself. Maybe it was a travel, but it was. Well, you know, it was close to the line enough where they didn't call it. And then he was able to, you know, gather it and actually make the layup. Same with that other time he slipped there. I think he's just like a little, what do you call, like over his skis. Yeah. You know what I mean? He's just going a little too fast.
Yeah, he wanted it too bad with there.
I think Shoe mentioned that.
Same guy.
Shoot didn't mention anything. He was actually sitting quietly in the locker room after the game and nobody was talking to him. But it was a little rough, but I don't think anybody wanted to pry. And I wasn't going to do it either. But yeah, Shoe mentioned that he seems to float when he jumps. And I really saw that last night up close. It just looked really different. It's like, you remember how Gerald Henderson would look when he jumped too? It was very similar to that.
Yeah.
Obviously a bigger
walking on air type where it's like going up the invisible staircase.
Right.
There.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But
that alley-oop was nice.
The main reason I wanted to bring him up is because I wanted to kind of use it as a jumping off point to talk about the big man defense and what we do when Mark Mitchell's out of the game. You know, knock on wood that he doesn't miss any more time. But last night showed us kind of how important he is for making this 3-guard lineup really work. Because if you're playing 3 guards and the 2 bigs, it's just you're undersized in the backcourt. And then you have Ryan there. And if we're playing any team that can run 5 out and do pick and pop stuff, it's just Ryan is not able to cover that. So I think that's where you got to bring in a guy like Stewart. And I wish John had kind of done that a little earlier last night, because especially at the beginning of the second half, they were eating us alive on that.
Yeah, I liked everything that I saw from John. And even it's not even a knock on Ryan, because I listened to the Brotherhood podcast today and he was talking about it. He was like, typically me being way out there or trying to just not where I'm usually drop down here.
Yeah, ceiling. All last year he stayed right in the middle of the lane there.
Yeah, so that's something that if that's how we're wanting to do it, maybe Sean fits that a little bit better.
And then I was hoping Reeves would be that, but he doesn't really look ready defensively to me.
Yeah,
I thought his offense looked okay. I think he had a couple nice finishes maybe, but defensively he was just out of position a lot. It's like at least Young seems to kind of know where to go. He just can't get there in time. Whereas Reeves seemed like he didn't quite know where to go.
Yeah. That's been my knock on him, because that's all we really need from him is to be a rim runner, a shot blocker. Like, and the defensive piece is what's going to really allow him to get on the floor and to stay there. Not so much post offense. So, you know, we'll continue to look at that as well. But all right. Well, if there's nothing else, you know, obviously I know we watched it live, or the recording of it, but you were there for when John addressed the media, did his press conference. Anything that stood out to you, or anything that we should kind of roundtable here right quick?
Well, I think there's two big points to touch on. The first one, of course, is that people did ask him about Jaden Shute not playing last night. You know, during the game, I think people were speculating in chats that I was following, is Jaden injured or something? Because surely in a 30-point blowout, he's going to get in the game, right? And then after the game, somebody asked him about it, and he kind of gave this cryptic answer, which is, you know, I'm paraphrasing here, but he has a long journey ahead of him. We've had discussions. He hasn't done anything wrong. He's in good standing. I'm going to keep it private for now. And that's basically all he said. And your immediate thoughts are there's two possibilities, right? It's either red shirt or transfer. And as it came out today, Steve Wiseman reported that he's going to red shirt. So it's the better option of the two for Duke fans.
Sure. But it was a bit of a, I first saw the quote, like I read it and I was like, ooh, that's a harsh quote, right? That's a tough quote when you hear he's got a long journey ahead to start out. It's like, whoa, from where? Like, from what? Like, what are we talking about here? But if the red shirt's in play and if he's on board with it, then I think it could be really good. Now, I don't think we're going to see many red shirts the way college basketball is now with the portal. But to me, that signals that he really wants to be here. He wants to make it work here. And now it's about, you know, putting in the work, I guess, being that practice scout guy that's, you know, going against the other team. I don't know. We'll see. Shu, what were your thoughts hearing that? I know we were all talking, chatting it up about kind of, you know, speculating, hearing that from coach. How you feel about it?
Yeah. I mean, I think Jaden even, put out a tweet, you know, that he wants to be here. He wants to win. You know, he wants to be a part of the winning tradition here. So it was nice to have him kind of back that up, and then to hear that, you know, it's not a transfer, because we talked about when we signed him, you know, those guys in that range, they're typically not ready to give you something right away. So you want to have them contributing as juniors and seniors. The problem is, can you get that far with them, right?
Right.
Can you keep them that long? I think, in, you know, down the road, he will, because we've seen him, you know, let it loose. He can shoot the ball, obviously.
Sure.
So it's just nice again to have, you know, to know that it's just a red shirt. But I'm just curious why this year, not last year. I don't know if that really matters, but
yeah, you think last year would have kind of been the better option, maybe, because the 2-3 position doesn't get any easier to break into next year. I mean, I guess it really depends on it, you know, I guess if we lose Foster and McCain, which certainly could happen, then you're sliding guys over and maybe it opens up a little bit more, but it's going to be tough either way. But if he's willing to stick it out for 4 or 5 years, I mean, if that's a long journey for sure. John wasn't lying about that, but he could be really good by that time. You know, any player who was ranked top 100 and then is in college in his fourth or fifth year is going to be better than most freshmen and sophomores.
Right. I think the one real value of benefit of it is, if he is on board and he wants to stick around, is that we do this. You don't have to worry about asking questions. You don't have to worry about thinking about what I did wrong. How do I get in the rotation? I played 7 minutes tonight. I didn't play again for 2 weeks. Like, we just eliminate that, right? You take that off of the plate. Yep. You're not worried psychologically, mentally, emotionally, that you're dedicated to improving your game, being a part of the program, you know, just being invested in bet and getting better. I think that's a tremendous benefit that we don't really talk about, or you hear about a whole lot, but now you don't have to answer those questions anymore. You don't have to worry about, like, oh, am I going to play tonight? And that sucks too, to be in that spot. I recognize that, but at the same time, it's like, well, now you get a chance next year to be a redshirt sophomore. Going to be a loaded team. It's a loaded class, but you still would have 3 seasons, right? So if you can carve out a role at all, then as a junior, you're looking at, okay, can I be a rotation player? As a senior, am I knocking on the door for contending for a starting spot or something like that, right? So there's a path, but you know, I remember what it was like to be 19, 20 years old too, and 3 years down the road is forever at that point, right? So it's you know,
what do you guys think about also just the time that we're in? Like, all right, Jaden's not a, you know, he's not a physical guy, kind of as like wide as like Caleb Foster, right? Like he's slim. Being in the COVID era where there's guys that are 25 and 26 years old that they're playing against, you know, do you think that has anything to do with, you know, how hard it is to just crack into some of this playing time? Maybe just defensively, he's not able to hold up against some of these bigger dudes.
And there's just so much guard depth this year, right? When Roach comes back, that really is like, okay, it's good for us, for Duke, right? But for a guy like Jaden, that's like, okay, well, now my shot at being a rotational player, oh, now I have to beat out Roach, I have to beat out Proctor, I have to beat out McCain, Foster, Blakes. That's five guys for two positions, pretty much. Maybe three. We can say maybe three spots, but are you going six guards deep? You know, I mean, Duke's a school that notoriously just goes six players deep. So I don't know. It's going to be tough to crack into that. But, you know, again, I hope the best for him, whether if he decides to stick it out. That's what I would hope, just as a fan, to see it all happen at Duke. But I would certainly understand if it's like, hey, man, I'd like to play. You know, I'd like to go somewhere where I can play. So I think either way is fair on that. But well, let's talk about the match coming up, right? I think it's a huge matchup early on, and I think it's really cool to have this type of game in Cameron. I've kind of harped on that for a while, as we don't have enough marquee non-conference games, whether it be a true road or a true home game. I don't really care either way. We do a lot of neutrals, and that's where the tournament's played, and I advocate that we still need those. But I love at least one or two series like this a year where we get to bring in Arizona. We get to go to Arizona next year. Not to bury the lead, I think the biggest talking point here is the return of Caleb Love to Cameron Indoor Stadium. So let's start there before we jump into anything else. Shu, how you feeling about Caleb coming back into the house? You think Derek Wild is go haunting him a little bit still in here?
You know, I think it's going to be different for him this year because he's in a whole different, you know, situation there. I saw, you know, he had 12 points in their opener last night. They did score 122 points. They put up a lot of points. So I guess I'm just more curious what his shot selections looks like now that he's got a different coach and you know, different team.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you this is we're only through one game, but his assist rate is 351st in the nation. So maybe not too much has changed, but go ahead, Ro.
Sounds about right. It'll be interesting to see because we don't have Lively and this team isn't so defensively inclined how he does, because he did very well against Duke under Coach K, did not do so well last year. So I'm hoping this is a John Shire thing that just kind of carries over.
Yeah. Is he starting for them?
He started last night. Yeah.
He did start. Okay. Okay. So I guess they started a couple of seniors then. I know the Johnson kid that they got is pretty good. So, yeah, I don't know too much about them. Obviously we saw that they put up 122. And, you know, regardless of who you're playing in a 40-minute college game, that's pretty impressive.
They're going to play fast. Right? I mean, they had eight guys in double figures. So,
yeah.
And like 10 with over 10 or 15 minutes played. So like, they played a lot of guys.
Yeah. I mean, right now they're the ninth fastest team in the country. And again, we're through one game here, but they're also the third fastest in terms of their average possession length. So they're wanting to get up quick and they're wanting to let it fly quick. So it's going to be really important transitionally that we're finding guys, we're finding those seams. I mean, we know Caleb Love wants to do that, but apparently all their guys want to do that. I'm assuming that means their bigs run the floor really well. So
That's where we need Mitchell back, or we need Stewart to play more. You can't have Ryan Young out there against that kind of transition team.
Yeah.
And they've got a big man that's really going to test this too in the paint. It's going to be a load for Flip, Ryan. You know, hopefully Mitchell's back. I don't know if he'll get the assignment any, but yeah.
Well, on the positive side of that though,
they do not have a stretch five. Both of their bigs are kind of more traditional paint players. So a guy like Ryan won't be tested in that sense.
Okay. Yeah. So that's, they got that one guy with the freshman. He's like 7'2" or 7'3" or something like that.
They got
that,
like,
right?
Four seven footers, I think. They got,
yeah, they do. Yeah. They have two true 7 footers. Yeah. Another 6'10 guy, 6'9 guy. So going to have some size. But again, it's, they have to guard us in space too then, right? Mm-hmm. If you're throwing a 7'2 guy and a 6'10 guy out here and we put Foster at the four on you, or we get you to switch off and you got to deal with McCain out here or Proctor in a ball screen, it could go both ways. It could go both ways. So
they have a couple other guys to watch out for too. Larson, he's a 6'5 wing. He loves driving the ball, high free throw rate last season. Shoots pretty well from everywhere on the floor. And then they've got Boswell, who's 6'2", kind of catch and shoot, 60% 3-point attempt rate last year, made 39%. So you kind of think of the kind of like Andre Dawkins mold of player. So that guy, I could see either Proctor or Foster maybe getting a task with to just chase around and really close out on him hard. I don't know who will guard Larson. He's 6'5", so...
Yeah, I'd put Proctor on Larson McCain on the shooter.
Right.
Yeah.
I hope that McCain has a little more discipline.
Well, yeah.
It's true. Yeah, yeah.
He plays really hard on defense, though. I'll give McCain that. And I think it was almost maybe he was a little too hard, maybe a little too amped up.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
That's fair. Yeah, they're not going to turn it over a lot, and they really hit the boards too, right? Yeah. Like, obviously, again, it's one game here, folks, but they're second in the country in offensive rebounding percentage. That's something we just talked about as an area concern for us, right? So
some tough matchup factors for us. I still feel pretty good about our chances, but yeah, there's a couple things that we may need to do a little bit better, and hopefully Mitchell will be back because that would help with a lot of them.
Yeah, I wish you were able to get the press row for this game because the atmosphere is going to be.
I'm kind of glad I don't
that's a big one to walk
this into. This one's one to not be able to cheer or anything. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a big time game. So before we get out of here, let's kind of just, you know, for the sake of it, do some predictions here looking at the spread. KenPom has us winning 78-75. I would imagine, I don't know if the betting line's out.
It's probably going to be
three and a half. You know, somewhere in that ballpark, probably 2.5, maybe. I would expect it to probably creep closer to 3, 3.5, 4. That track with y'all, 78-75 Duke. Any disagreements, agreements? Where do you see the score? Shu, I'll go to you first. Give me a winner and a score.
I might go just a tad bit higher, like 81-78.
Okay.
Yeah, it kind of stole my thunder. I was just thinking I would hit the over for combined points in this game just because of what you said about pace. And I think that KenPom still has baked in Duke with like the 302nd pace. I don't know if it's moved up since last night's game, but he was going off of last year kind of expecting us to play slow. And we're not going to play slow. And then if we're going to be playing Arizona, it's going to amp up the pace even more. So I think it's going to be in the 80s. And I'll say 82-74 Duke. I like actually a somewhat comfortable margin.
Yeah. I was almost just going to do it just for the factor, but you got close enough. So now I was going to say 82-72 for, my old heads out there in the 01 title game, but, shout out to 01. But yeah, I mean, I do think it's going to be higher. I think defensively, both teams are a little bit behind their offense in that regard. So I think it's going to be something. I don't want to go too high. Something like let's go 85-78, 85-77, somewhere in that ballpark. I'll be surprised if we put 90 on them. But I would also be kind of surprised if we didn't get to close to 80 too. So it's going to be somewhere probably in that ballpark.
Do we know the officiating crew already yet?
Oh, do you want to know?
Nah, probably not.
So, you know, there's things to look for. I still think for me, it's just that Caleb Love storyline too, especially just I want Proctor on him personally, just because there's some history there, right? There's a little bit of competition kind of going on there. It sounds like we all feel pretty good about Duke winning this one, though, even despite it being a half-hour game.
Yeah, I can't bust out the pessimism this early in the season. Save that for later.
Yeah, I mean, it's a big game for the freshmen, but it's a bigger game because it doesn't have to be about the freshmen. That's what I like about it, right? Is they get amped up, come in ready to play, be yourself, but we got some dudes that are here, and hopefully for, you know, Proctor, Flip, especially, but Roach, Mark, I mean, this is what you come back for, right? Yeah. This is the type of game you come back for. You hadn't lost at home yet.
I was going to say, hadn't lost at home.
The sophomores have never lost at home, so no need to start yet. So we'll see. Tommy Wood's a good coach, really good coach. I like what he does offensively. He's probably one of the best offensive coaches in the game right now with some of the other guys that have gotten out. So it's going to be a test. It's going to be a test. So we'll see. We'll see. Anything else you guys got about Arizona before we get out of here?
Jamie, letting you come to my house to watch it with me and Chef? Or?
Yeah. So Friday, I think I'm going to try to shoot down. It's a 7 o'clock game, right?
Yep.
Yeah, so I'll probably try to leave here around 6 or so.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would just say, you know, obviously all these non-con games against legit opponents are huge for us for resume boosting. So
yeah,
would really love to get the win on this one. Yeah, I won't freak out if we don't, but you don't want to lose opportunities.
We haven't mentioned Michigan State lost their home opener to James Madison. So like,
yeah,
already dinging one of our resume building games, you know, but whatever.
Yeah. Michigan State is currently shooting 5% from three as a team. So scintillating over there. You
know. So they keep that up.
Yeah. You know, the non-con is definitely going to be something that we need to keep strong with the way the conference is. So, you know, we'll see. I'm fired up. I'm ready for it. I'm ready to see what we do, ready to see what we got. It's a potential Final Four type of matchup. So should be a good one. Should be a good one. But, you know, in the meantime, y'all know what to do. Rate, review, subscribe, email us, thedevilsdenpod@gmail.com. You can find us on the boards at thedevilsden.com. Find us on Twitter, devilsdenpod247. And, you know, no love lost. So keep the faces strong and the verb high. Go do it.
Sonic the Hedgehog, a new hero arrives.
I am
ready. Is there anyone stronger?
No.
Tougher?
No.
Funnier?
I do not make jokes. I make warriors.
Knuckles, now streaming only on Paramount+.
Yes!